Welcome to the College Football Bros, the podcast that's at its best off script. And now, here are your hosts, Michael, Ryan, and Trey Newman.
Welcome to the College Football Bros podcast. I am Michael Newman, and I'm joined by the brother who is tied for first place with me in the pick'em pool.
Oh yeah, we are. That's me, Ryan Newman.
And by the other brother, who's not.
No, I'm nipping at your guys' heels though, Trey Newman.
Yeah, you're doing well too. Okay, on today's episode, we are going to discuss our takeaways from the big games from week two, and we're going to make our against the spread picks for week three. But first, we of course have to touch on the Big Ten. They announced their Council of Presidents and Chancellors have unanimously voted to begin the fall football season on the weekend of October 24th, and they have really kind of adopted the most stringent protocols of any conference. All players, coaches, and trainers are going to undergo daily antigen testing. The earliest that an athlete who tests positive can come back is 21 days, and the season is going to... What's that?
It's a lot, 21 days. Like,
it is, yeah, for sure. Season's going to be 8 games in 8 weeks, plus one. So essentially 9 games, because on championship weekend, not only is the number one team from the West going to play the number one team from the East, but two will play two, three on three, all down the line. So that kind of wraps it up, the craziness in the Big Ten over the last few weeks. What are your guys' thoughts on the final result here?
I mean, of course, I'll take it. Obviously not ideal, but better than nothing, let's put it that way, you know, as a fan of the Big Ten. But you touched on it, Michael, their guidelines or their rules are the strictest out there. The 21 days is crazy. Not crazy, like I'm a doctor, I'm not saying that. It's just relative to the other general rules that we've seen. And then the other thing is they outlined where, you know, if a team or 5% of their team gets it, they'll have to not practice or even play for a full week. 5% is not that much. Like if you have a 150-man roster, we're talking less than 10 guys getting it. So they're really going to have to make sure these athletes are in as much of a bubble as possible to prevent this. And then the last part, you mentioned that the 8 games in 8 weeks, not a lot of leeway, not a lot of flexibility to make up any games, which some of the other conferences are starting earlier. That's an advantage where they have some built-in off weeks. So you have to think it's likely that there's going to be multiple games or teams that won't get to play a full slate, which is unfortunate, but I hope not. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the only issue I guess I would have with starting so late. I mean, I know they can't start tomorrow or anything or this weekend, but I mean, why would they? Can't they start this a week earlier and give themselves like one bye week in there? I'm not sure.
I'm assuming they really thought it through and this was kind of the earliest, I guess, but a full month seems like.
You know.
They said that they thought about the 17th, and they said that extra week to provide enough testing is what they'll need. I mean, that's what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's better than having absolutely no football, but I did wish they would have maybe come to this conclusion a little bit sooner. Like they really treaded water here, seemed like, for quite a while. They could have got, I mean, it seems like they've had this decision done for maybe at least a few days, and I don't know. It just, everything was a little tardy. Seeming like if they were more transparent,
we have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. I'm sure they were going as fast as they could.
That's what's the problem. Like, that's kind of the issue I have, is it was zero transparency with the Big Ten. We nobody knew anything. So it was just a lack of clarity. I mean, other conferences have not been like that. They are pretty.
I'm not sure that that's true. Like, have we seen the reason? You know, I mean, people are suing the Big Ten because they didn't kind of lay out all the reasons why they canceled, but it's sort of different when a conference decides they're playing. Like, no one's suing the SEC saying, give us all the information as to why you've decided to play. It's just kind of accepted, you know?
Well, I am hearing you, but I wish that they would have just been more communicative. Like, people aren't going to get mad as much, of course, as you don't, you know, like to play. Like, the SEC is like, I'm sure there's people out there, of course, and they're fine. Like, they wish they wouldn't play. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as we've seen, vast majority of people want to play. So I feel like, you know, when you're a fan, when you're somebody that's greatly affected by this, the communities, if you don't play, I feel like they deserve an answer. Why?
Right. No, that's true. That's why they ran into such big issues. The Pac-12, like we talked about, they were they released the report from their medical team and had a lot less backlash. I mean, for a variety of reasons, but that was one of the reasons. They really laid it all out there. Hey, here's why we don't think we're good to go yet.
Exactly.
But I guess, like, overall, ignoring the messaging, like you said, Ryan, because that was horrible. They clearly did not handle that well. The actual result here, I think, is reasonable. Like, you know, 6 weeks ago or whatever it was, they took the advice of their medical advisors that said, given the information they had at the time, pursuing the season was too risky, so they postponed it. And here we are 6 weeks later. They've reevaluated the decision. I guess new information has come out. The
better big thing, testing, of course, is, apparently.
Yeah, the daily rapid
that
testing
was kind of the key factor.
Yes, that's the main factor. And of course, another factor is for sure the backlash, or just the public outcry and push for this to happen. They wouldn't have come back to the table, you know, maybe if it weren't for that. So I think they're kind of both factors that contributed to it. If there was only a public outcry without any changes in terms of testing, I'm not sure that this would be happening right now. But
do you guys see Feinbaum today? Given, like, he was like saying this is all due to Ohio State, like, got to give Ohio State credit for fighting back here for this.
You want some, like, credit for Nebraska? Right?
I mean, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
They just got so much flack. Come on now.
There's a lot of Ohio State writers that are praising
Nebraska. Let's talk about who really got the ball rolling there, huh? Come on.
All right. No, it's true. That Nebraska and Ohio State were certainly, seems like, the two big ones pushing for this.
It's true.
All right. Well, there you go. We're back. Big Ten will be back.
Others are coming back too, I would think. Pac-12.
Yeah, it seems like now the Pac-12, a lot of news today about them kind of talking with
pretty much impossible for them not
governors of California and Oregon trying to get back to practice. It seems like I just read before we came on the podcast that USC and UCLA are going to be able to go back to practice soon. So,
oh yeah,
we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, in the coming weeks.
The Mountain West is coming up with a plan too that came out tonight. So,
oh yeah,
we'll see.
All right, stuff's happening. Let's get to the week two recap, and we'll start with a game that feels like forever ago now. It was on Thursday. Miami won at home against UAB 31-14. What did you think of the new offense, Trey?
You know, it was it took a while, as expected, for Miami and Derek King to kind of get their rhythm under the new Rhett Lashley offense. Rhett Lally. You know, they were only up 14-7 at half, and UAB was hanging tough, but obviously the Canes ended up pulling away in the second half. They leaned heavily on the run game. Cameron Harris, 134 yards and two scores. Derek King also ran pretty well. As a team, they ran for over 300 yards. And then on the defensive side, it was kind of what you'd expect. They did what they had to do. It's a strong unit. They looked pretty solid, you know, holding UAB in check most of the night. What did you guys take out of this one?
I mean, I'm kind of with you. I'm not saying that the Miami offense is great or anything, but it was promising. Like, I liked the pace of the offense. They ran a ton of plays, and it was that pace combined with the fact that UAB's offense just could not stay on the field. I think that really kind of led to Miami's success running the ball, because that UAB defense appeared to be tired in that second half. And then, of course, just the threat of De'Aaron King on those zone reads also contributes to the running backs having a great day. Cameron Harris looked great, the two freshmen as well. So that was nice to have 337 rushing yards. But ultimately, I think the passing game still remains a question mark. You know, it's the offensive line is not good in protecting De'Aaron King. He was kind of just having to improvise a lot, which was working. He was making some great plays, but I don't know. We just need to see consistent passing offense before I can count on them being a great offense or even a good offense.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sold at all yet on that group. Just the offensive line's not going anywhere. Like, they're not going to be great at any point this year. De'Aaron King's just going to they dominated on the ground here. They obviously had UAB's offense really helped them out by just not being able to do anything. That really contributed to Miami being able to just wear out UAB. But, you know, what are they going to do when they face an offense that's good, an offense that can stick on the field even against the U's defense, and they need to rely on that passing game, and they can't dominate rushing like they did? How will they respond? Probably not so well, I think. I don't know. I'm not I don't look at this game and change my opinion at all, really, of Miami there. I knew they had a pretty good defense. I knew the offense would, you know, have some hiccups, but I mean, maybe I'm slightly more positive on them than
yeah,
I was.
I think I'm a little bit more positive, yeah. But still, but
yeah, the jury's still a little bit out. We don't know. We don't have enough answers yet. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep. Well, let's get to some struggles from the Big 12, particularly against the Sun Belt. Louisiana pulled off the upset at Iowa State, 31-14. I thought the game was probably a little bit closer than that score would indicate. Louisiana had a couple of special teams touchdowns, but still, it was still a legitimate victory on the road for Billy Napier. So huge for that program. As for Iowa State, the defense was great. That's as expected. The offense was terrible, though. Brock Purdy had probably his worst game ever. 16 of 35, 145 yards and a pick. But I'm honestly not panicking. It's not great to see, but game one last year against Northern Iowa, it took them like double or triple overtime to win that game against an FCS team. And Iowa State went on to be just fine last year. They had a winning record in the Big 12, almost won at OU, at Baylor. So I kind of expect the same thing to happen again. I mean, maybe I revise my expectations for Iowa State down a little bit, maybe one win or so in conference, but I still think they'll be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not totally hitting the panic button. I mean, it is always alarming when you lose as a double-digit favorite, but Louisiana's good. Like, that's a good team they played. Mm-hmm. So it's really, I mean, they would have beaten Kansas State. They would have beaten Kansas. They would have probably beaten Texas Tech. They would have competed well with, who am I missing? West Virginia. You know, like, there's teams, mm-hmm. they'd be a solid team in the Big 12. So losing to them, you can't just overreact to it, especially since it's the first game. And like Michael said, they had a couple of kind of fluky plays, whatever, one punt return, one kick return. It's not going to happen every game, you know? Because mm-hmm. outside of that, it was neck and neck. This game was neck and neck. Louisiana Lafayette had one super deep bomb, 78 yards. It wasn't like they were consistently putting together drives, you know, until the very, very end. They had one nice drive, but it was just a very even game. And remember, Iowa State was without their stud tight end, the best tight end maybe in college football. So I think that would have been a little bit different story if Purdy had him to throw to. So not overreacting. They get TCU, I think, coming the following week. That's a huge one just for them to bounce back, because then the week after they play OU. So, you know, they go and win Fort Worth and win there, which certainly is more than possible. You know, I think we'll be kind of back on the bandwagon here.
Yeah, and for Louisiana, it was only their second ever top 25 win. They beat A&M back in 96, I saw. But yeah, obviously the two big special teams plays were maybe the difference or whatever, but they also missed a couple of field goals. So they had chances to really kind of salt this game away even more impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, they ended up winning comfortably. But yeah, you mentioned Charlie Kohler, Ryan. They also were missing their right guard, but I don't think that was really the difference in this one. They dropped a couple balls in the first half that could have maybe changed and sustained some drives that would have helped. So, like you guys, I'm not completely discouraged. They have the whole Big 12 slate ahead of them. That's really what this season's about. So, I don't. I'm not off the wagon quite yet.
Yeah, mm-mm. It's not like they were looking to make the playoff or anything. All their goals are still kind of in front of them.
Yep.
Okay, next one from the Sun Belt. Arkansas State beat Kansas State 35-31 on a late touchdown pass from Lane Hatcher to Jonathan Adams. Ryan, what'd you see in this one?
Yeah, this one was, what a great game this was. It didn't feel like it was really a fluke here for Arkansas State. It looked like they were just the better team in this game. They were even -2, you know, in the turnover battle. So they were kind of a little bit in a hole there and still won. They had more rushing yards. They had more passing yards. Of course, they have more total yards. Far better on third down. Arkansas State held them to K-State one of 11 on third downs. I mean, that's rough for K-State, just converting one third down. You already mentioned Jonathan Adams. What a great game he had. Three touchdown catches. I mean, he was awesome. When you have a guy like that, it just makes such a huge difference. You can just throw it up to him at like the last play. Just throw it up to him and he'll just go get it. Like, that was like a 30-yard pass, and Hatcher was under pressure and just kind of, I mean, it was just a great play to kind of win the game there. And you know what's funny? Arkansas State had four guys complete passes in this game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Guys. They ran a couple wide receiver
three guys threw a touchdown pass. So,
and Logan Bonner, I think it was him that made the catch on that one play. That was a great catch for a quarterback.
So, kind of crazy. I've never really seen four guys on one team maybe complete a pass. It's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just really impressed with Arkansas State. They were also down 8 or 9 starters from a year ago in this game, and they still, it's just not a good look for K-State.
Yeah, that defense lost a lot, but
giving up almost
looks solid.
Giving up almost 500 yards of offense, that's probably the most concerning part of K-State, because K-State's recipe last year for their success was their defense and their run game, and the run game wasn't good either. That was an issue. Skylar Thompson did okay, actually, through the air, better than you know, I would have anticipated. But I mean, the Red Wolves held them to under 100 yards on the ground. That's not K-State's
what happens
not going to
lose all 5 months of offensive linemen.
Yeah. But in Arkansas State, it's only their second ever win against a Power 5 program since moving to FBS in 92, and that was
kind of surprising.
And that was also, I believe, against Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M's the theme here.
Yeah. I just kind of echo what you guys said, particularly with you bring up the good defense and running
Texas
the ball.
A&M the theme? Did I miss something?
Oh no! On the first, I said Louisiana. Their only other win against a top 25 team was Texas A&M. Right.
Whoops. Ryan tuned out.
Tuned you out the first one. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
No, but that I guess I'm worried about both trenches, because the D line, they lost a lot of pieces, especially from that interior. And then you mentioned the offensive line losing everyone. So not a good start. And they play at OU in their next game. So it could be 0-2.
L.
Okay. And Skylar Thompson, by the way, he did overall have a good game through the air, missed a couple of big throws that could have been touchdowns. Sure. So that you know, you wish he had those back, but next one we have here is Coastal Carolina at Kansas. Another Sun Belt victory. Woo. Trey.
Yeah, the Fun Belt, man. They made a statement on Saturday. This was fun to watch late on Saturday night. The Chanticleers, they dominated 38-23. It was 28-3 at half. They ended up going with freshman Grayson McCall at quarterback, and he looked like an experienced junior out there. He had 5 touchdowns, 3 in the air, 2 on the ground. Miles Kendrick for Kansas came in for relief for Kansas, and he led a pretty decent rally, but they were just too far. The Jayhawks were too far behind. What was telling was right off the bat when Coastal got an interception, and then they ran the ball 9 times in a 10-play drive and punched in with a touchdown. That kind of set the tone. I know Kansas had, you know, quite a few players not dressed because of COVID, maybe only a couple starters, but this game was all Chanticleers.
Yep. Nice win. And then the last struggling Big 12 team we have here is Texas Tech, barely surviving at home against Houston Baptist. They won 35-33, and Baptist missed a 2-point conversion at the end to tie. And I'm actually just going to play a clip here from my preview last episode of this game. Houston Baptist at Texas Tech. Red Raiders favored 39.5. And they gave up a ton of big plays last year. And last week against North Texas, Houston Baptist actually threw for 480 yards. So maybe a tiny bit of a test for Texas Tech. But if they're improved, they should definitely give up a lot less than 480 yards.
Yeah, I would think.
Nope.
Whoops.
Nope.
Ouch.
Apparently they have not improved, because Bailey Zappe for Houston Baptist had 567 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, yeah, this is just, the defense is obviously terrible. They brought back a lot of starters. They brought in some transfers in the offseason, so you thought maybe they'd be improved, but not looking like it, at least after game one.
Nah, I went over on my over on Texas Tech this year. I mean, at least they won, but
at least they got the win. I think we all went over.
North Texas just got North Texas the last week just whooped up on Houston Baptist by like 26. Mm-hmm. Not a good look, Red Raiders. Okay,
39.5 point dog, and they almost went to overtime. Amazing. That's crazy.
Wow.
All right. Last game that we'll cover in detail here. Florida State went down 16-13 at home against Georgia Tech in Mike Norvell's debut for the Seminoles. Ryan, What happened here?
More of the same here for the Seminoles. Just disappointing. Started off looking pretty solid, you know, up 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. Good looking drive there early on. They had a little rhythm, it seemed like, but they just, that was like scripted plays or something, because they had nothing after that. It was just nothing. I mean, Georgia Tech shut them down. And Georgia Tech's D, of course, as we know, is not exactly gangbusters. I mean, maybe they've improved, but that would be a huge leap for them to be really good. So at this point, you got to be pretty disheartened for our, about maybe James Blackman. I know a lot of FSU fans have certainly given up on him. Maybe they gave up on him last year. I had some hope for him. You know, he had some moments as a freshman. That was seems like forever ago now. But on the flip side, man, just great huge win here for Jeff Collins and Georgia Tech. I mean, winning on the road at Florida State with a true freshman QB, got to be a great sign coming off of a rough first year. So speaking of that freshman, though, Jeff Sims, very good showing here for him on his first game, first action.
Yeah.
Two kind of freshman throws, but
two very, very bad plays. But
two, like, okay, you know, this is who threw some of those, like, for USC? A couple, was it Slovis at the beginning of last year? It was like, dude, what was that?
Yeah, maybe Slovis.
Just, he just threw it like right to a guy.
Like BYU, he had a bad game. But
yeah. It's like
maybe Darnold, anyways, a few years ago, he would have some games like that.
Maybe that was it. But it was just like, dude, how did you throw it right? I don't know. Anyways, he was good outside of those. So he had he threw for nearly 300 and rushed for 65 yards. So, I mean, I need to see a little more from him before I kind of like jump on the bandwagon and you know, think he's going to be really good. But, like, you know, it's a very promising start.
For sure. Yeah, just those two picks to Asante Samuel Jr., who had a great game for Florida State, but not a lot of Seminoles had good games. Really, both sides of the ball weren't good, just especially the offense. They dropped passes. Offensive line, no surprise, was terrible, and it wasn't helped by the fact that they had a bunch of injuries up front in this game during the game. So, Blackman, 3 turnovers. I just think they look like a team that has a whole new staff and in a bad offseason for that. So I don't think they're going to reach their goals this year. It looks like a transition year.
Yeah, I mean, the Yellow Jackets did what they had to do. They uglied it up and they pulled it out. The one thing I will say for Florida State is that the game was kind of weird since there were 2 hours of weather delays. So there was, it was kind of an awkward day, but I mean, they didn't deserve to win in the end. I mean, especially Georgia Tech overcame missed kicks. Marvin Wilson was blocking a couple. That was pretty crazy. They couldn't get a kickoff, but I'm encouraged by Georgia Tech, but I'm not ready to write off Florida State though, just because it is a new staff and no offseason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they might be able to show some progress, but yeah, they're not going to go to the Orange Bowl or anything this year, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. They'll get better as the season goes on for sure. Okay. Let's see. Rapid recaps time, Ryan. What do you got?
All right. First game, I got it was Duke at Notre Dame. Slow start in this one here for the Irish. They were like 3 touchdown favorites going in, and you know, give Duke credit, they hung in. It's like a 4-point game going into the fourth quarter, so it was really up for grabs. But the Irish, they did own the fourth quarter and ended up winning 27-13. Ian Book was okay. He wasn't great in this one, but enough, I guess. But their running back, Kyron Williams, looked pretty darn good. Looks like they found somebody there to kind of take over the ground game for sure. So he looked good. Notre Dame still gets one more week to kind of work out the kinks. They got South Florida coming in this week, so they should. They're like 4 touchdown favorites in that one, so maybe they can kind of get their engines revving a little bit louder here for this next one. Let's move on to the next one. We got some FCS matchups here. We have Missouri State at OU. This was about as big of a mismatch as I've ever witnessed, or, well, I guess I didn't even see it because you had to pay $1 million on pay-per-view to be able to watch it, but
saw some highlights.
But that was about it. It was like 28-0, like 10 minutes into the game. It was just like, OU would score in a second, and then Missouri State would go 3 and out, and they'd have like false start. I was watching Gamecast, and it's like, oh my God. It was just horrible. They had Missouri State 135 total yards in the game. OU just, they didn't convert a single third down. Spencer Rattler looked really good, of course. I mean, hard not to. He was pretty impeccable. So that was very encouraging and not surprising, right? I mean,
It's like, we shouldn't be surprised.
It's a horrible team they're playing, and it's OU. So, and the guy was top recruit, Lincoln Riley. Yeah, they were going to do good. So 41-0 at halftime. But OU really slowed down. Really, they slowed down after the first quarter. They just took their foot off the gas, and they'd only scored 7 points in the second half. Final was 48-0, which made a lot of us happy having plus 49 on Missouri State. That was weird, covering by 1 point on a 48-0 game, but it worked. All right, let's move on to, this is cold-blooded, we're moving to UTEP at Texas. UTEP is not FCS. It's another blow there to UTEP for saying they're FCS, but maybe the other way around. Maybe it's a blow for FCS saying that UTEP belongs there. You know, either way, this was like the OU game. It was just total annihilation. 45-3 at halftime. Ellinger literally was just throwing the ball to wide open guys left and right. It was target practice. He was nearly perfect. They ended up winning 59-3. Good warm up here for Texas. You know, OU, Texas just both had cakewalks.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I have two more. Oh boy. Eastern Kentucky at West Virginia. You just saw that. Eastern Kentucky at West Virginia. Bad FCS team here, but West Virginia rushed for 329 yards in a game, which if you go to last year, they were couldn't do that against anybody. So,
yeah, that's promising. Why not?
That looks promising. They had a couple guys go over 100 yards. Jarrett Dagey looked really good. So defense was good as well. Good start. Good 56-10 win. They got Oklahoma State next weekend. So good for big first test for them. Oh, I have three more. Oh, man. Wow. Sorry. Two more after this now. Austin Peay at Pitt. Sorry, I'll go a little quicker. Pitt's defense still really good. They smothered Austin Peay. Austin Peay rushed for just 1 yard. Flip side, Kenny Pickett was really good. You know, Austin Peay. But they didn't really run the ball that well, though. So that's a little concerning. But hard to complain when you win 55-0. And finally, I got Campbell at Georgia Southern. Crazy game here. This one was, first off, just because Georgia Southern was missing 33 guys. But, you know, mainly due to COVID. But so it was a pretty even matchup going in. Campbell scored a touchdown with like less than 30 seconds to go in the game to go down by one, decided to go for two, go for the win. Mike Minner's their coach, right? So Mike Minner, former Nebraska player who played for Osborne, it's like, oh, got to go for two, right? Didn't get it.
Worked out about as well as for Osborne.
Yeah, exactly. Shy Words had a big game for Georgia Southern. Good running game. So anytime you're missing 33 guys and you win, I don't care who you're playing, right? That's you'll take the dub and get out of there. So
yep.
There you go.
All right, North Carolina won at home against Syracuse 31-6. And this game was close at halftime, mostly because North Carolina's offense was turning it over. Sam Howell had a couple picks. They had muffed punt. So Syracuse was hanging in there, but their offense just could not do anything. It was horrible.
It was atrocious.
Offensive line is terrible. Tommy DeVito really just has no chance. So I don't see that changing anytime soon. If I'm a North Carolina fan, I'm happy with that performance because I can deal with the offense being slow going for a little bit. It got going eventually, and you know the offense is going to be great, but it was nice to see the defense dominate like it did. Yeah. Louisville took down Western Kentucky 35-21, and two of Western Kentucky's three touchdowns came on drives of 1 yard and 4 yards as a result of in one case, the punter fumbling, in the other case, a punt block. So offense and defense for Louisville was dominant. Mikael Cunningham is, I think, one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the country, and that offense just has a ton of weapons. So we'll get to see them this Saturday. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Tulane at South Alabama. Tulane was down 24-6, but scored 21 answered to win by three. Closer than you'd like for Tulane, but win's a win. And South Alabama, after going 2-10 last year, was this close to going 2-0. So they're. Certainly
against
better this
two
year.
Pretty good teams. Well, we thought Southern Miss was supposed to be good. So, yeah. It's not like you're playing bad.
Two betting notes from some of your games before. Austin Peay at Pitt.
Yes.
Pitt,
yes.
55-0. They won. They would have covered. Problem was, they ended up having 10-minute quarters in the second half because they were so far ahead at halftime, they had decided to go to 10-minute quarters. You need to play 55 minutes for the bet to count. So, people like our own father who bet Pitt, the bet got canceled. So even though
the heck? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a bad beat.
And
how do you decide to do
that? Some teams do that when they're just killing a team at half. They do that.
It's like spring ball stuff. What the heck?
And then Syracuse at North Carolina. I will die on a hill and say Syracuse was the right side.
I don't think so, Trey. I don't think so. Like, they dominated them.
I know, but they were down like four at the fourth quarter. But yeah, okay. Moving on. Clemson at Wake Forest. No real surprises here. Clemson won 37-13. Really wasn't that close. Clemson put up over 500 yards of offense. They throttled down late. Etienne and Lawrence played like the superstars that they are. I was impressed with Clemson, just how they handled their business, and they don't look like they're slowing down. I'm not going to overreact to Wake here. They're not going to face a juggernaut each week, so I'm still looking forward to seeing what Hartman and Clawson can do. Yep. All right, moving on to Charlotte at App State. App State actually needed two fourth quarter touchdowns to pull away to win 35-20. Statistically, though, they dominated this game, put up over 500 yards of offense. They held Charlotte in check on defense. The reason it was close is because App State turned it over three times. Charlotte returned a kickoff for a touchdown. So Charlotte did everything they could to ugly it up and pull off an upset, but App State was too much. They replaced running back Darrington Evans very well, just fine. Marcus Williams had 8.4 yards per carry, so that's encouraging for App State. And finally, UTSA at Texas State. This was probably the craziest game of the week. UTSA ended up winning 51-48 in double overtime. Texas State, though, they did have to scratch their starting quarterback, Brady McBride, due to COVID, but Vitt stepped in. He has plenty of experience in the past. He played well enough. But here was the craziness. Texas State was driving with just over 3 minutes left, down by six. They throw an 81-yard pick six to go down 41-28. At the time, some of us that were watching that, we were wondering why UTSA didn't go for two to go up by 14.
It was dumb.
But you still thought, okay, there's only 3 minutes left. Like, they're still going to pull it out.
Yeah.
Anyways, Texas State scores a quick touchdown, cuts it to six. They force UTSA to punt quickly. Lo and behold, they return the punt, 91 yards for a touchdown, to tie the game. So at this point, UTSA is kicking themselves for not going for two. Texas State misses the extra point. So then they go to overtime. They exchange touchdowns in the first overtime, and the poor Texas State kicker misses a field goal in overtime. UTSA ended up makes their field goal and wins. Crazy, crazy game.
That's rough.
That was a crazy game.
All right. Well, if you would like to bet some games like that,
yeah,
check out our sponsor.
All right, our sponsor, mybookie.ag. Winning season at MyBookie returns. We got winning season means doubling your first deposit, means Survivor, Super Contests, and Squares. At MyBookie, winning season means hitting all your parlays and props. You can just sit back now. We got a bunch of football games to watch. You can see your team play in action. A lot of Big Ten fans can see their teams in action here. So it's time to rejoice and just kind of celebrate the season in play. We got promo code CF Bros. It's all caps CF Bros. So if you join in, you can double your first deposit up to $1,000. So if you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000 in free play. So it gives you a lot of extra money just to have some fun and get more excitement. So mybookie.ag, use the promo code CF Bros.
Okay, let's get to our week three against the spread picks. Unfortunately, a little bit weaker slate than it could have been, with Houston at Memphis postponed, Virginia at Virginia Tech, BYU at Army.
Yeah, three of the four top games.
But Houston found another team to play. They're going at Baylor, and the Bears are favored 4.5. Who do you like here, Ryan?
Yeah, the spread on this one has been kind of shrinking.
That's a low spread.
Yeah, it's a very low spread for a lot of respect being given to Houston here. 4.5-point dogs on the road against a team that was in the Big 12 title game last year, returns their quarterback. So that's, you know, respect given for Danner Holgerson's team. Tough game to handicap, though, I got to be honest with you. Both teams have some major unknowns. Of course, Baylor with their new head coach, Dave Aranda, and essentially a brand new defense with scheme and just new players. I mean, they lost practically everybody from last year. So that's kind of got me worried for Baylor. Houston with a ton of red shirts and of course transfers that are now ready to play after sitting out last year, so they'll look like a new team as well. But overall, I think I got to go with Houston, even though it is a small spread. I think they're going to take a large step forward with all that new talent. I like Clayton Tune. I think he's a solid quarterback, and they got big time receiver Marquette Stevenson back. So the O-line should be far, far better. They had 12 guys last year make a start on the O-line. I mean, that's just a revolving door. How are you supposed to be successful when you got no consistency on the O-line? So I think that's going to take a huge step forward. And we know Hogo knows how to coach offense. They'll move the ball. So they got better talent, better depth. I think they can take advantage of Baylor.
It's crazy that this is the first time these two teams have played since 95, considering in-state.
Wow. Yeah, in-state teams.
Huh? And they scheduled this game within like hours because of the COVID outbreak. It's pretty amazing, especially nowadays when scheduling, they schedule it years in advance. But I like Houston. I'm kind of buying them this year. I'm so curious to see if that Holgorsen redshirting experience pans out. Mix in the transfers like you mentioned, Ryan. I think their offense is going to keep them in the game. Just too many unknowns on the Baylor side. Besides, you know, the Big 12 didn't exactly have a stellar showing last week, so maybe that trend will continue. So I'm taking the points with Houston.
I'm with you guys. I see Houston being just so maybe the most improved team in college football this year. So I'll take that +4.5 against a, you know, in general, I'm looking to bet against new coaching staffs just with this offseason. I'm sure I'll contradict myself at some point today, but that's generally what I'm trying to do. And I'm interested to see all those guys coming back on defense, all the Power 5 transfers for Houston, because that's the side of the ball that really needs to take a massive step forward. Next game, we have Boston College at Duke. Duke is favored 6. And this is Jeff Hafley's first game as BC head coach. Oh, good. I'm going to contradict myself right away.
Oh, boy.
Well, because you also got the other side, Chase Bryce, you know, new quarterback in a new system. Though he did have some success against Notre Dame, so I don't think he's going to struggle mightily this year, especially against BC's defense, actually, because their secondary is not very good. So that does cause some concern for me. But I just think BC can do enough on offense to keep this a close game. They've got a really good offensive line. I think David Bailey at running back is going to have a huge year. I don't think they're going to miss A.J. Dillon at all. And that should make...
At all?
I mean, I really don't think so. I mean, I think Bailey's been
pretty productive.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I think Bailey's going to be great, but, you know.
Whatever. It would be nice to have Dillon, fantastic. But I don't think it's a huge loss when you've got...
There you go. That sounds better.
And then... So, that kind of puts the quarterback in a good situation. I'm thinking and hoping that Phil Jurkovec is going to be the starter, the transfer from Notre Dame, because he's got a lot more upside, but he is currently listed as the co-starter with Dennis Grossell, so we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, BC +6, I think they've got good pieces around the quarterback.
Yeah, from what I saw from Duke, obviously against Notre Dame, that was, you know, they did impress me. I didn't expect them to really hang in quite as much as they did. The defense gave the Irish some trouble. I don't see why they wouldn't give Boston College a little trouble in the same time, especially with coming in with a new coach. But, you know, on the flip side, I don't think Duke's offense is really going to scare anybody. I mean, yes, they did okay against Notre Dame. I mean, they only managed 13 points, and Bryce was not horrible by any means, but not great. So I just don't think, no matter necessarily which team they're playing, I don't think Duke can really just go off on anybody, and they're not going to be a high-flying offense that's going to put up a ton of points. And BC, they do have enough returning pieces on that defense to be okay. Now they get their leading tackler back, so I think they'll be able to keep up a fight here with Duke. Just don't trust Duke to beat much better than another ACC team with a good running game like BC. So yeah, I got to take the points with BC.
Yeah, I know it's hard to give points with Duke, and I'm a little reluctant, but I am going to give them. I'm going to pick Duke here. They have a game under their belt, which BC doesn't. And Chase Bryce was fairly competent. And, you know, Ryan, you kind of belittled them only scoring 13 points. Notre Dame is very good. And they also had two drives stall and they had to settle for field goals. So maybe that doesn't happen against BC. Well, you know, who knows? And the BC just has a lot of questions. The new coaching staff, new quarterback. I do like their O-line and running back. The one thing on their defense is they're bringing in, just like last week, they got the Cal transfer, Luke Beckett, who was a tackle machine. So we'll see if he mixes in or plays at all this first week. That could help that defense. But with those unknowns, I'm going to take Duke.
Okay, next game, Syracuse at Pitt. Pitt is favored 21.5, Trey.
Ah, I have to do it. I have to go back and take that ugly Syracuse offense again.
Oh, should have covered last week.
I mean, they were in the game. I know there was reasons why they didn't, but
it really exploded
that,
there. At
God,
the end.
That offensive line is just it, they did. North Carolina just really pulled away at the end. But anyways, the offensive line, you mentioned it earlier. They were so bad, and now they have to go up against a pretty good Pitt defense. But on the other side, the Syracuse defense did do fairly well against Sam Howell, especially for the first three quarters, most of the game. So I don't see why they couldn't do something similar to Pickett and Pitt. They're not going to put up a bunch of points, but I think they're going to rebound a little bit enough to generate enough offense to cover that big three touchdown spread.
Yeah, I'm going with you, taking the points. I mean, Pitt's defensive line going up against that Syracuse O-line does worry me big time. And really just the fact that Kenny Pickett against Austin Peay, I know it's an FCS opponent, but Pitt wasn't doing that against any teams. I feel like definitely not last year. It feels like for the last couple of years, they weren't putting up 55 points. So that is promising, but I got it. It's just too many points here in an ACC game. And like you said, that 3-3-5 defense for Syracuse looked at least better in game one than I thought it would look. And maybe their offense can, well, I don't know if their offense is going to stay on the field much, but to give them a break. But, you know, I mean, they're not going up against Sam Howell this time. So I think that secondary can challenge Pickett. This will just be the next test for Pickett, because I'm not buying in on him taking that massive step forward. He might be doing it. This might be the year, but this is the next test for him.
Yeah, I'm going with you guys. I'm kind of doing the selling high and buying low on these squads. I'm trying to avoid the initial knee-jerk reaction after 1 week. You think Pitt's, their offense is pretty good now, and their defense is still amazing. Oh, Syracuse's offense is horrible. They can't do anything, and they're just going to be horrible this year. Well, probably, maybe, but, you know.
But maybe not.
I feel pretty confident about that last one, but
one game isn't enough of a trend.
Don't think it's quite that drastic as what we saw in week one, so... Yeah, I'll just that, you know, if it was 20 and a half, I would probably go with Pitt here.
Oh,
but 21 and a half, that's tough. I'll take those big points.
Okay, next game, Wake Forest at NC State. NC State is favored 2.5.
Yeah, it should be a good one. NC State, they got this is a big one here. If we got, wow, why did I just repeat myself there? Good job, Ryan. Well, I had my notes like NC State is favored 2.5, and then I was like, oh, I can't say that.
I already said that.
Might as well repeat something else.
So I'll repeat something else. Rough first game here for Wake, but like Trey said earlier, just you can't hold Clemson games against anybody else in the ACC. They're just kind of like, forget about it. You know, it doesn't really even matter. So not looking really looking into it. I will say Hartman, you know, competed. He had some solid moments there. So that was good to see. And against a team like NC State, whose defense was horrible last year, I think Hartman could have some big moments. So that was positive. NC State, obviously, they were rough last year. Ton of injuries. Looks like on offense, they're going to go with Devin Leary as the QB this year. Got his feet wet last year as a freshman. You would think he would improve, especially with a lot of pieces around him. Bam Knight at running back for NC State's a good, solid running back. Mm-hmm. Freshman last year looked really good. The whole line returns a heck of a lot of starts, and a couple of guys that were injured last year coming back, so they got some experience. That offensive group should be improved. The D should be better too, I think. They got some young guys maybe going to be taking a leap forward. Patrick Payton, freshman last year, ended up leading the team in tackles. He wasn't even a starter, I guess, but he should take a big jump. Could be a big-time player at linebacker. So, you know, I think I'm going to have to give the points here. I think NC State's going to do enough in and at home to maybe take down Wake.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to give the 2.5. I do think Hartman is going to have success against the NC State secondary, but kind of like with Houston, I just think NC State is going to be just really massively improved this year, maybe more than people think. Maybe go back to maybe not quite the 9-4 team type teams that Doran had, but I mean, but closer to that than what they were last year. Ton of injuries last year. They played the second most freshmen in the country. I think they'll take a step forward, and they've got good pieces around Devin Leary. So yeah, I think he'll be a lot better.
Wow, you guys are kind of trying to talk me off my pick. I'm going to go with Wake. They got the game under the belt. Didn't turn it over against Clemson if they want to look for a silver lining there.
Yeah.
Obviously, Hartman and the offense is going to fare much better going up against NC State than Clemson. And then, you know, NC State, about 3 weeks to a month ago, had a big COVID outbreak. And I even saw one player mention they didn't even know when they were able going to be able to play. So they've had to deal with that a little bit. I'm just not a huge Dave Doran guy. I think they will improve, but they're also going to be breaking in some new coordinators on offense and defense. It's just
Tim Beck, right?
Tim Beck is the offensive coordinator. He's been everywhere, it feels like.
Yeah, he has.
So
he's been all right. He's been solid, you know.
He does. Yeah. But again, Leary's going to have to learn a little bit of a new offense right off the bat here. So I'm just going to take the Demon Deacons and say that Hartman bounces back.
Okay. App State -4.5 at Marshall. Really important game for both teams, especially if they're looking to make a New Year's Six Bowl. I think for Marshall in that case, it's kind of a must win. And it's going to be tough. App State is rock solid yet again. The offense is basically the same. I mean, Zach Thomas and most of the key pieces around him are back. I thought the defense would take a step back this year, losing good amount of production. And maybe they will, but game one against Charlotte, they dominated what was a pretty good Charlotte offense last year, and they made the quarterback, Chris Reynolds, look really bad. I don't know if Chris Reynolds' injury had something to do with that, but either way, it was impressive.
Promising either way.
Yeah. But I say that, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to overreact to one game in this case because the freshman quarterback, Grant Wells, for Marshall, looked really good against Eastern Kentucky. I watched all the highlights of that game, and yes, it's Eastern Kentucky, but he was hitting receivers in stride. I was really impressed, and he's a capable runner too. So if he's half as good as he looked in that 10-minute clip I watched, then maybe they can pull off a cover here.
Yeah, I'm taking the points too with Marshall. I'm going to buy Grant Wells for now, and you know, obviously, like you mentioned, he's not going to do what he did against Eastern Kentucky. But the thing I like about him is that he's got five seniors starting on the line ahead of him. There's speed at the skill positions. The receivers looked pretty good in that first game. Four receivers actually caught touchdowns. And the defense was outstanding, granted, against Eastern Kentucky. That's not going to... They're not going to duplicate that. But Zach Thomas and those boys will do just fine. And I also like Doc Holliday. He's got the coaching edge here going up against the first-year head coach, Sean Clark. This is Clark's first big game. It's just one of those games, though, that I kind of look at, and it's kind of all or nothing. Like, I think App State either wins pretty comfortably, or Marshall just wins straight up. So it's kind of like Marshall's legit or they're not. But I'm going to take Marshall.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you guys. Marshall's just a good program and they're a good team. I don't feel comfortable giving up that many points against a good Marshall team. I'm not sure about Grant Wells. Of course, nobody really is. But I am sure about Marshall in general. They were a good team last year. Got a lot of returning production. I was impressed with the D. So yeah, I gotta take those points and 4.5 with the home team.
Okay, UCF -7.5 at Georgia Tech. What do you think, Trey?
I'm going to go with Central Florida here. I know Georgia Tech comes in with confidence, beating the Seminoles, but I just trust the UCF offense to do a lot more than what FSU was able to do, only scoring 13. Dylan Gabriel has a ton of, bunch of speed, skilled players, playmakers around him. Georgia Tech's defense played really well, but UCF's offense is a different beast, and I don't see them generating three turnovers like they did last week. So I'm going to go with the better offensive team with UCF.
That's fair. I liked what I saw from Georgia Tech here in week one. I think they're a much improved squad, which is no surprise. But I think Jeff Sims showed he had a lot of upside, so could have a very solid year. That UCF defense will be solid for sure. But I'm worried about them a little bit taking a little bit of a dip, especially with those key couple guys that are out, decided to opt out. I think Georgia Tech is going to be able to move the ball on them. I think they'll be able to keep this one close. And this being UCF's first game, that's Trey's calling card, seems like, today.
Yeah.
First game, right? So I could see a sloppy play from them, maybe a couple of uncharacteristic turnovers or two. Who knows, maybe some misassignments, whatever it is. So I'm going to go ahead and take the 7.5 with Georgia Tech.
I disagree with Ryan. I'm with Trey. I just think this UCF offense is just a totally different beast from what Georgia Tech faced against Florida State. And I don't yet trust that Georgia Tech offense to be able to keep up with an offense like UCF. So I like UCF -7.5 so much here that I'm going to make it my lock.
Wow.
All right. Biggest game of the weekend, game day, is going to be here. It's Miami at Louisville. Louisville is favored 2.5, Ryan.
Yeah, so we got Louisville minus 2.5 here.
Yeah.
Hey, just it's the same exact spread as before. Yeah. You know, I got to keep it going. Yeah, both teams had solid starts to their season, handled business pretty easily against a couple of quality teams here from Conference USA, you know, Western Kentucky, and you got UAB there. So, but I'm going Louisville. Don't pay attention to what happened last year in Miami. That game has no bearing on what happens this year. You know, I just feel confident with Louisville's offense compared to Miami's. They are a proven commodity. Michael, I agree with you that Mikhail Cunningham is one of the most underrated quarterbacks there is out there. And I just think that Louisville has, I have the trust factor with Satterfield too. I know that he's a fantastic coach. Their defense looked much better in week one here against Western Kentucky. Just think it's going to be a flip of the script as kind of what happened last year in Miami. So I'm going with the Cardinals. I feel confident. So I'm going to make them my lock.
This is like the first game I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, this is an awesome game.
Anxious to,
yeah, it's a good one.
I'm also going to go with Louisville and make them my lock.
Ooh, boy.
A lot of people are going to look at that Western Kentucky score and say they only won 35-21, but the Hilltoppers scored twice on fields of or drives of 1 yard and 4 yards due to special teams blunders.
Did they really? I like that better than when I said it, but yeah.
We're so bad.
I said it was like 20 minutes ago. It's fine.
I know, we record our audios separately, and then we just kind of pair
them. No. No, but honestly, there's some people that only listen to the previews and don't listen to the recaps
or
whatever.
Fair.
But either way, the defense...
Or they just turn Michael off because he's long-winded.
Uh-huh.
Also fair.
But no, Louisville defense looked really good last week. 10 tackles for loss, a goal line stand. Obviously, Miami's a much bigger, stiffer test, but especially with that run game, Cameron Harris and De'Arik King. But if I'm a Miami fan, I want to see if King can move the ball with his arm. They only averaged 6.1 yards per attempt last week. That's going to have to improve, especially going up against Louisville. We know they can move the ball even against a really good Miami defense. Cunningham looked great last week. I almost forgot when we previewed Louisville. I almost forgot about Des Fitzpatrick. He has almost 2,000 receiving yards in his career. You know, we talk about Tutu Atwell a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to take the home team Cardinals here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Louisville too. This is a really tough game to pick. I really like both teams. I kind of want to cheer for both of them just because I think I love the quarterback so much. But I guess what I'm looking for here is. I'm going to be more interested when Miami's offense is on the field, I think, because we're trying to see, is Miami's offense legit, and has Louisville's defense really taken that step forward like they need to, because they were really bad last year. And if they want to be able to, you know, compete for an ACC championship, that needs to take a step forward. So, yeah, I'm just kind of going to watch and enjoy this one, and I guess take Louisville minus 2.5, but not super confident. Okay, let's... let's get to some honorable mentions here. Ryan?
Yes, I lead us off here. All right. First game I got is Louisiana Tech at Southern Miss. Southern Miss favored 5.5, even after that first game debacle. It's a big Conference USA West battle here. These teams were both picked second and third in the conference behind UAB. Louisiana was supposed to have already played Baylor. Louisiana Tech was supposed to have already played Baylor, but that game was postponed. So this will be number one. I'm going to take the points here with Louisiana Tech. They're a good program. I just have a hard time giving 5.5 points with a team like this bad as Southern Miss did in week one and a coach that just left them after one game. It's just not a good look. So give me the 5.5 with Louisiana Tech. Next game, I got the Citadel at Clemson. I love my bookie. It's been great so far. They don't have a spread for this one. So I'll just say Clemson at minus who gives a crap. The Citadel lost 27-6 to South Florida last week. So this, of course, will be an ugly game.
What do you think? What would you make the spread in the game?
53.
I'll take those points.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe. We'll see. All right.
The Citadel beat Georgia Tech last year.
True. They
lost 27-6.
Clemson, upset alert. Upset alert.
No, I know. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Hopefully South this Florida turns out like our Texas Tech conversation defending Bailey Zappi.
Yeah.
Citadel just comes out and beats them.
All right. So, yes, South Florida here, going to Notre Dame. Tough road trip, going to the Irish there. Irish are favored 25.5. Promising first game here for Jeff Scott and the Bulls after beating the Citadel 27-6. I think Jordan McLeod will be the guy again at quarterback. He started last game. Cade Fortin was out. Unclear if he'll be back. They also had two other guys play. So we'll probably more than likely see more than one guy at QB in this game for them. Notre Dame kind of let me down last week. I went with them. I'm going back to them. They're not going to let me down 2 weeks in a row. So I think they should dominate this. This South Florida team is still in there, you know, figuring things out. And finally, I'm going, we got Austin Peay. Austin Peay gets a lot of pub here early in the year. Austin Peay at Cincy. Did not see another line on this one again for my bookie. It's just FCS, I guess. But Cincy would be favored by what? I guessed like maybe 29 or so, right around 28, 29.
Let's see. What was Pitt was like, favored? 27. And then Pitt killed him. So Cincinnati, I mean, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, right. All right, cool.
Maybe a little more.
But I'm interested to see this. Yeah, maybe a little bit more, but I'm interested to see what Cincy does on offense here. You know, see what Pitt obviously did to Austin Peay last week.
33 on Bet Online.
33, okay. There we are.
Yeah, a little bit more. Yeah, I was thinking it was a little low, but whatever. All right, Desmond Ridder, interested to see what he can do. See if he can get out of that little bit of sophomore slump he had last year. And see with the running backs, how they look without Michael Warren. So, but I'm going to take nobody because I didn't say a spread. But if it's 33, I'll take Austin Peay.
Okay, Charlotte at North Carolina. Tar Heels are favored 29. I'll just lay the points because Charlotte has a bad defense. I think Howell will bounce back. And they're missing their quarterback, Chris Reynolds, who I think is maybe the best quarterback in Conference USA. That's a huge loss. They're going to go with an FCS transfer, Dom Schaffner, which it sounds like a made-up name. It sounds like I just made that up, but I think that's the name. SMU minus 14 at North Texas. I think this game could be a shootout. Neither team has a good defense. I'll bet on North Texas to hang around. They just put up over 700 yards on Houston Baptist, and the new quarterback, Jason Bean, looked pretty good there. Florida Atlantic at Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern's favored 1.5. Apparently, 11 players for FAU have tested positive for COVID-19 this week. They also had two players opt out. As of right now, though, they plan on playing the game. Pending the results from contact tracing, I think. And just more bad news for FAU. Before the season, their best receiver, John Mitchell, injured his knee. He's out for the year. They had already had two other receivers opt out of the season, so they're down to three wide receivers, I read. That's not good. On the other side, Georgia Southern, they had 33 players out last week. Still don't know quite how many of those are going to be back. So good luck betting this game. I have no idea what to tell you. I'm not even going to make a pick. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to bet it.
Louisiana, minus 17 at Georgia State. I'm going to go with Georgia State. They've got 17 starters coming back from what was a 7-win team last year. Interested to really just watch their new quarterback, the freshman Quad Brown, see what he can do up against a good Louisiana defense. And now might be a good time to catch Louisiana. They're coming off of
riding high.
A big win over Iowa State.
All right, I got Tulsa at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's favored 23. I feel like everyone and their mother is going to be betting Oklahoma State. All we hear in the offseason is about their returning production with Chuba Hubbard, Tylan Wallace, Spencer Sanders. And we've also heard that they're a dark horse Big 12 title pick. They also added, by the way, Oklahoma State added a Wazoo transfer, Tay Martin, a couple weeks ago. He has 143 career receptions. They just recently got him. But I'm going to go contrarian, pick Tulsa. They have some firepower of their own. I like Zach Smith, ton it over 3,000 yards last year. Their running back stable is impressive. Guys like Shamari Brooks leading the way. He has a ton of Shamari Brooks and Corey Taylor themselves over 1,500 yards each last year or last few years. A couple transfers as well. Keelan Stokes is back. They're not going to be able to stop Okie State, but they're going to score enough to cover. Navy is playing at Tulane. Tulane's favored 6.5. What a game to pick. Is Navy as bad as they looked against BYU? I know they didn't get to tackle or have any physical practice, but yikes, it was ugly. As much as I do want to pick them, since not many will, I just can't. I have to see if they've hit rock bottom yet. Tulane, they were shaky against South Alabama, but they were working in their new quarterback, Keon Howard. he found his stride in the second half. I like the Green Wave D as well. They were great against the run, had 5 sacks, 12 tackles for loss. That's just what I want to see going up against a rush offense. So I'm going to take Tulane. I got Troy -3.5 at Middle Tennessee State. I'm going to say Middle Tennessee bounces back. Asher O'Hara, he's too good not to produce. Troy's defense, they have a bunch of new pieces. I just don't think they're going to shut them out like Army did to Middle Tennessee a couple weeks ago. The concern, though, is that Troy offense. They got a lot of weapons to work with, probably the best receiving core in the Sun Belt. But they got to replace highly productive Caleb Barker at quarterback. They're going to go with Gunnar Watson. I'm just going to take the underdog and say that Middle Tennessee bounces back. And finally, Liberty is playing at Western Kentucky. Hilltoppers are favored 14. This is a tough one. I love Western Kentucky, that D-line, but Pegram through the air just doesn't do it for me. I'm going to take the points. Hugh Freeze and Liberty, they lose a lot of production, mainly their quarterback, Stephen Calvert. But they got Auburn dual threat transfer Malik Willis, most likely the guy. I just trust they got a good O-line. I trust Hugh Freeze. He's known for mustering up a good offense. I'm going to say the Flames keep it within 14.
All righty. That does it for our week 3 picks. Let's close this thing out with a questionable finish. Coastal Carolina gets the spotlight yet again as their matchup against Campbell is the only game on Friday night. Name a time when everyone's eyes were on you.
For me, I'd have to go back to when I was in high school. I was playing basketball, and I remember we had one game. I think it was my sophomore year. We were playing at our rival.
They're our rival.
Lacoste Canyon, which featured future NBA star Chase Bettinger.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I thought he was going to be better.
I did.
Yeah, he talked about lacking a killer instinct. That guy was...
He was athletic. He could shoot the three.
He was incredible. He was awesome. But anyways, yeah, I didn't really play much of the game, but I got in at the end. I drove to the hole and I was going up for a layup. I got blocked like clean as day, but they called a foul. So I don't know how. So I went to the line. You know, this was a packed house. It was like, you know, a few thousand people watching, and just me. Their all eyes are on me, which I'm shooting those free throws. I sunk them both.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
I couldn't feel my arms, but I made them.
Okay. Well, mine was going back, not quite to high school, but to college. And my professor was in a big auditorium, and I forget what we were talking about, but for some reason he was trying to make the point that it's difficult to act normal when everyone's eyes are on you. So he decided that he was going to call on a random person, and that person ended up being me, of course. And he said, all right, I want you to walk up and down the aisle of this auditorium and just try and walk normal. And we're all going to judge and see whether it looks normal. And
oh my God.
First of all, that would be, I was sweating. Like, that would be tough enough just anyway. But I had also, I'm dead serious. I had just bought new shoes and had realized that day that they were incredibly squeaky. Like, I didn't even wear the shoes after this day. But they're really squeaky. So I was like, all right, do I walk down the aisle? Do I try and walk in a normal manner and be super squeaky, or do I try and walk like a little bit weird to try and minimize the squeak? And I what would you guys do? One or two?
I'd walk normal because it's going to squeak either way.
Maybe I should have done that. I went with option number two, and it probably...
Oh, so you looked awkward?
I looked awkward and probably painful. Squeaked as well. I honestly don't even like my brain, I think, blacked it out. I don't quite remember, but I know it was bad.
Wow. Mine's not exciting as your guys', but just today I had it was a virtual presentation, about 60 people watching. They could see me on camera, you know, in non-COVID times it would have been in person, but so that was
all right.
That was exciting.
Hey, right now you've got like over 100 people watching you on YouTube.
That's true.
Uh-oh, Trey just froze. He's like, oh crap, my stage fright. All right, next question. The news of the Big Ten coming back originally came out because of a hot mic at a Nebraska press conference. I want you guys to pretend that your microphone isn't on right now and say something stupid.
Hey, can you turn on Big Brother? I really want to watch it.
Oh, wow. Shots fired at our mom and your wife.
No, this is... No, but it's not. Like, I actually do. That's like a diss on me. I actually like
Oh, you like it. No, I like it now. I like it now.
Oh, yeah.
I like it now. All right. So mine is actually like 100% serious, guys. I am still not convinced that girls don't pee out of their butt.
Oh,
All right, Ryan, do you have anything stupid to say?
Yeah, hold on. Let me put myself on mute here. My wife just walked in. Sorry about that. Hey, sweetie. What's
okay,
up?
No. He's not on mute.
Yeah, no, we're still doing it. We're in the middle of it right now. How's it going? Oh, God, it's really bad as usual. Trent, Michael are just speaking out of their butt. I'm just trying to carry them. They're so bad. Every word is just so dumb. I don't even know what they're doing, but. We're almost done, so, you know, I'll be there shortly.
Nice.
I feel really dumb, too, because I bought it. I thought you were... I was like, dude, you're not on mute.
I did, too, for one second. I was like, oh, crap.
Oh, wow. Ryan, by the way, you weren't... we heard that, so...
Oh, what?
All right, let's get to our upset specials. You got to pick a 7-plus point underdog to win outright. Last week, I took Coastal Carolina. They did it. They beat Kansas. Not a lot of options this week, but I'm going to take Liberty to win outright as a 14-point dog at Western Kentucky. Trey, you brought it up. I think Hugh Freeze did name Malik Willis the starter, so that's promising. I mean, a dual threat option under Hugh Freeze's guidance, I think they got a shot.
You guys, we kind of picked these beforehand. You guys didn't leave me a ton of options, but I'm going to take North Texas. They're getting 14 against SMU. The Mean Green, I think they're going to bounce back this year under Seth Luttrell. Their offense looked pretty good in week one against, what was it, Houston Baptist. Mm-hmm. I just think that they could bounce back and maybe upset SMU here at home.
Yeah, I can see that. All right, here, I'm going to go with, let's see, we got Georgia Tech over UCF. Spread's about 7.5, so it's a very realistic chance there. Tight point mm-hmm. spread. Hopefully, I did hit mine last week. I had Arkansas State beaten K-State, so that was good. But yeah, let's go with Georgia Tech this week.
All right. Thanks for listening to the College Football Bros podcast. If you want to support us, the best way to do so is to subscribe to our Patreon. $5 a month gets you bonus episodes and access to our Discord chat that we're in every day of the week, but Saturdays especially, watching all the games. So you can do that at patreon.com/collegefootballbros. And also shout out to one of our patrons, Ty, who's going to be getting married this weekend. So congrats to him.
Oh, what's up, Ty? Yeah,
good luck this weekend. And we'll talk to everyone next week.
Congrats, Ty.
You've been listening to the College Football Bros. If you have any questions for the next podcast, email them to collegefootballbros@gmail.com. Keep up with the brothers on social media, like them on Facebook at College Football Bros, follow them on Instagram at College Football Bros, and for their commentary on Saturdays, follow them on Twitter at CFB Bros. Thanks for listening.